Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. You might call it the Scott Walker edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we had no idea how much influence the Three Martini Lunch has until yesterday when we talked about Scott Walker's cratering poll numbers coming in at 0% in CNN. And within like 3 hours, he was already out of the race. So apparently people are clearly listening to our analysis of what's going on. But yesterday, Walker did in fact announce that he was suspending his campaign. So now we're down to, 15 left for the Republican presidential nomination. And we're going to be going through the good, bad, and crazy parts of this. Obviously, it's disappointing for conservatives who liked the Walker record and thought he would have been a good fit to take on some of the big problems in Washington. The liberals are loving this. I saw the Young Turks using the phrase, "Ladies and gentlemen, we got him."
Oh, my God. Like, That's the phrase for Saddam Hussein and bin Laden. Yes. My God.
Yes. Now you know who we're dealing with.
You didn't get anything, all right? All you did was sit around while, the donors didn't. Anyway.
Right. So anyway, Walker gets out, but there might be some small silver linings here. Jim, I know, for example, that you are excited about the fact that Wisconsin doesn't have term limits and people are going to get a full-time, very good governor back in Madison.
Yeah. For those of you who really wanted to see Scott Walker go far this year, you may have to console yourself with his acceptance of the post of Emperor for life of the state of Wisconsin. And we chuckle, but like Tommy Thompson did 4 terms, right? Yes. I mean, you can spend a lot of time and make a lot of changes in that state. We'll talk more about the downside, but there's one or two aspects of this. One is I could make a strong case and may later in this podcast make the case that Walker should have done better, that he deserved better than he got, that he was a serious candidate who could have done a fine job in the presidency. And that his extremely low poll numbers, or the tumble he took in the poll, says more about the state of mind of the Republicans responding to pollsters than it does about the actual state of the race. Having said that, when he saw it was not going, things were looking bad for him, he did not dilly-dally. I understand he did not want his campaign to go into debt. He saw the writing on the wall and decided to end it. And we can argue about whether that's the right decision, but there was a certain amount of decisiveness there, and you kind of have to admire that. He's not going to hang around, unlike some other folks. You can insert your joke here that, Pataki's still here, but Walker's gone. Lindsey Graham is still here, but Rick Perry is gone. I have this feeling that Scott Walker realized he may or may not want to spend the rest of the year well into next year trying something that just wasn't going to happen for him, and he decided to cut bait. So credit where it's due. He made the call, and he didn't really seem to be we can head into the bad marking about how he felt about that, can't we, Greg?
Yeah, we certainly can. I just want to add one more thing about Walker, and I think it speaks to his character. He seems like a guy who didn't have to have this. He was legitimately doing it because he wanted to do something for the country and thought he was actually going to do a good job at it. I don't think he's going to be stewing the rest of his life over the fact that he didn't become president of the United States, and you can't say that about a lot of people who run. So on to the bad martini, and Walker gave a very brief statement. He did say a couple of important things, and here was one of them that he said about the tone of the campaign that I think clearly went against him.
Sadly, the debate taking place in the Republican Party today is not focused on that optimistic view of America. Instead, it has drifted into personal attacks. In the end, I believe that the voters want to be for something and not against someone. Instead of talking about how bad things are, we want to hear how we can make them better for everyone.
Jim, it just seems like this particular political climate, particularly within a very frustrated GOP, just didn't mesh well with his calm, measured, policy-driven approach. This was a year where people are very frustrated, not only with the current administration, but what they consider many times to be the lack of initiative in their own leadership. They wanted more fire in the belly, and they just didn't get it from Walker. The style and the circumstances just didn't mesh well.
Yeah, I think John Gabriel over at Ricochet made maybe some of the best cases for Scott Walker. One is he made the comparison of Scott Walker to Calvin Coolidge, Silent Cal, the idea that you didn't need to be a loud, boisterous, attention hog, outspoken, brash personality to be a good and successful president. That in fact, if you had the right policies, the right temperament, the right mindset, that there could be a that could be actually a path to a long prosperous period for the country. And what's more, he also kind of said, you know, that he used the another presidential slogan, a return to normalcy. And that maybe we as a country had had enough drama going back all through the Obama years, through the Bush years, the Clinton years, that maybe it was time for the country to have a bunch of boring, responsible grown-ups in charge, making the right decisions and not trying to fundamentally transform the United States of America and things like that. It was time to put the grown-ups back in charge and just get the country moving, you know, and get all the indicators moving in the right direction. The electorate did not like that. And I'll actually argue, you look at a field in which Trump, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina are the top three. You have an electorate that has pretty much decided we don't want anyone who's been elected before. We don't want anyone who's been a governor before. We don't want anyone who's been a senator before. We don't want anyone who's been in government before. And I'm sorry, Republican electorate, I don't think that's – I could see that going badly very easily. I think there is value in experience. I think if you want to reform government, you have to know how government operates. I don't think you get make things better by pulling people who have the least familiarity with the problems they want to solve. I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who are going to disagree very strongly with me on this, but Ben Carson fans might legitimately argue, you're telling me being president is harder than brain surgery. On the flip side, I don't want an amateur brain surgeon, right? You know, I want somebody who is intricately familiar with the challenges they're going to be approaching here. Now, you could argue whether Scott Walker really had the full spectrum of familiarity as you wanted to see, a couple of weaknesses, some slips on foreign policy and things like that. The suggestion that Walker was too boring, or that they had no interest in what he had done in Wisconsin, I think is a very ominous indicator for Republican mindset right now. I think accomplishments should matter. Anybody can tell you what you want to hear. Anybody can, you know, check the right boxes on the viewpoint thing. The guys who have actually done it should mean something, because that indicates who they really are, right? Your record is not something you can change. And to me, I think that should count for more. There are a lot of Republicans out there who apparently strongly disagree with me. And then on the charisma and things like that, look, for one, I don't think Walker had a bad charisma. I don't understand how you could look at Walker and like not – I don't see anything what's dislikable about him. And if you really do need him, I think you may have been watching WWE too long. And I say this as a guy who has a brother working for WWE. What professional wrestling is great. Hollywood is great. Entertainment is great. But government and politics and who leads us and the responsibilities of commander-in-chief aren't supposed to be entertainment. And if we've really lost that, I'm really kind of left scratching my head about this. So that's my really bad martini in the aspect of Walker's departure, Greg.
Yeah, I think you hit it exactly on the head. Whatever you think of Perry or Walker personally, the accomplished reformer, small government governor used to be the ideal for the Republican nominee, and how quickly that has changed is amazing. Perry's slogan was, this is going to be a show-me, don't-tell-me election, and obviously that's not what the people want, and that definitely carries risks with it, as you explained very well. So on to the crazy martini now, and this is an interesting part of Walker's farewell statement from this campaign that has a lot of people talking today. It's about one of the reasons why he got out when he did.
Today, I believe that I'm being called to lead by helping to clear the field in this race so that a positive conservative message can rise to the top of the field. With this in mind, I will suspend my campaign immediately. I encourage other Republican presidential candidates to consider doing the same so that the voters can focus on a limited number of candidates who can offer a positive conservative alternative to the current front runner.
Jim, obviously he's saying we got to nominate somebody other than Donald Trump, and we need to solidify that support around that other person. But there's more than 4 months before the first vote happens, so it might be a tad early, although I guess if you're going to be a leader, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, there are two aspects that I think qualify for our crazy martini, Greg. The first being, and when I observed this morning, there were some people who are on the Walker team who really didn't like this. So what was, you know, the pitch for Walker was he was Mr. Fearless, right, Greg?
Yes.
No questions, please. I'd be like, really? Really? You know, like, I mean, at some point, Scott Walker will tell all, and we will know exactly what was going on in that campaign. I will point out that, you know, Scott Walker's super PAC as of 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon was saying, hey, we got an ad going up in Iowa we want you to hear about. Now, super PACs and campaigns aren't supposed to coordinate. On the other hand, I think it gives an indication of just how blindsided they were. And the campaign was saying, hey, do you want to talk to him Friday, yesterday morning? So this really came out of the blue to a lot of his people. That seems a little bit crazy. And again, it's so out of the blue, I'm hearing a lot of people wonder if there's some other part of the story we haven't heard yet. You don't want to get conspiratorial. You don't want to get, you know, but it just seems like so many people didn't see this coming. There's something else going on in this story because lots of, you know, there are a lot of candidates out there who have money troubles and bad polls, and they're still there. So, you know, it's kind of what made Scott Walker decide, okay, this is not something he wanted to continue. The second thing that kind of jumps out about this, you know, Greg, it's September 22nd. we all got to unite against a Trump alternative? Really? Really? You know, nobody votes till February. I suppose you could say, you know, we all got to unite behind one alternative. The easy thing is, okay, you first. And Walker actually did it, I suppose. Now, throwing his weight behind another candidate would mean more if he had more supporters right now.
Yes.
To offer the second comment that the Walker people were emailing me complaining about today. I don't think it's that early, and I don't think there's a reason to panic. Trump went down 8 points in the last CNN poll. If he's got a third of the field at a time like this, yeah, okay, it's time. But if he's got a quarter, okay, you know, he's got his chunk of the base. I again, let's see, we got a little bit left of September, October, November, December, January. 4 months before anybody starts, you know, casting votes. It's time to get it down to a two-man race. I'm sorry, Governor Walker, I just don't see it. And I just don't understand why you'd want to do that. And I'm seeing, you know, as I pointed out in the jolt this morning, by this point in the 2012 cycle, Greg, we'd had six debates by now. Every candidate who's at, you know, 5% or less is hoping for a moment, right? Fiorina is probably the best example of this cycle. She had a good first debate, and then in that second one, really came across as exactly what she wanted to be and had a couple good exchanges with Trump and things like that. She's, you know, so she's getting a jump in the polls. You need that moment. You need that time in the spotlight where everyone's paying attention, where you do something really good and memorable. Or maybe the worst case scenario, you have an oops moment like Rick Perry and things go bad for you. Well, we're only having one debate a month, which means we're only – and oh, by the way, half the candidates are shut on this, you know, kiddie table debate, so they really don't get the same audience. So in a way, this debate schedule, the RNC rules have kind of limited the opportunity for somebody to have these moments. And oh, by the way, you look at, you know, all the debates we had last time. That's kind of why we had everybody got to be the front runner for a month. You know, Michelle Bachmann had a rise and fall. Herman Cain had a rise and fall. So we have a setup here where it's very tough for if you're one of these back-end candidates to suddenly start jumping ahead. And you can't help but feel kind of sympathetic towards them and kind of wonder if this system set up by the RNC may – look, you know, if Donald Trump ends up being the nominee, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to say that the RNC inadvertently set this up by the debate schedule and the way they organize the campaigns this year.
Yeah, they can't win because they just thought there was just too much sniping. The last time around, they had 20 debates, and everybody agreed that actually hurt eventually Mitt Romney. And now this time around, having it much more tightly regulated has created plenty of problems as well. So not exactly sure what the answer is other than having Jim and I moderate one of the debates. But how this plays out better for the party's advantage in the future, I think will be the subject of many future discussions. So, Scott Walker, thanks for playing. Now we're down to 15. We'll see what happens next. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
You know, Greg, we should point out that the three-martini lunch debate will actually involve the candidates having three martinis.
Ah, yes. Well, if it's 3 hours long, yeah, you can have one every hour. So, Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.